It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
We are all here, as promised before, and as usual. And hope everybody is recovering nicely from one holiday, getting ready for the next one. That's coming all around real quickly. Man, I can hardly believe it. I can't believe it's December, much less that into it a week. But I checked again on the calendar this morning. It's what it said.
Sure enough.
Not much I can do about it, I guess. But it's no wonder we all feel like we're getting a little older. Anyway, enough of that. We got to. It's a cheerful time of year, so we'll get into some more cheerful stuff today. As usual, there's a lot going on, and some of it impacts the market, some of it doesn't. And really, it's kind of hard to tell some days when you look at it and shake your head and just wonder what people are thinking, or perhaps it's if they're thinking. Who knows? Anyway, welcome back to all the regulars. You're the reason we're still doing this and still will be. As long as you keep listening, we'll keep talking, as I like to say, from week to week. If you're new to the show and just found it or heard about it or something like that, try to stick around for the hour, and we will try to reward you with some interesting news. Probably you learned something along the way also. We always do. We learn from you. We learn from each other and so on. So if you want to input to us, then just pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255, and we will put you right through and talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. Well, it was another interesting week in the market, one that can leave everybody with a little bit of a smile. So I'm not sure that it was a blockbuster of any sort, but hey, up is up and green is green, as I say, right?
It was a nice week. It was calm. It was not crazy. The VIX is down to like 16. Those weeks make me happy because it's just so much less frustrating than seeing wild swings in your account. It was a week of modest gains, and it seems like it's been a while since I said that because it's been kind of all over the place in the last month or so. What's driving the market right now, in my opinion, is expectations for a rate cut this coming Wednesday. Those expectations have swung pretty dramatically. The market's currently pricing in a 95% chance of a rate cut at the next meeting. But just over 2 weeks ago, the expectation was just 34% for a rate cut at that same meeting. That's a pretty major swing in a very short period of time. And you can see that the market has responded very favorably to that swing in expectations because the last 2 weeks have been pretty darn solid. But if you look over the last 6 weeks, you'll see that the market really hasn't done anything. Well, the net result is that it hasn't done anything. We saw a pretty steep decline and a pretty sharp recovery. But basically we're right where we were 6 weeks ago. And, I'm not sure what that means. Maybe we're on the brink of, pushing higher, which would be great. That would reaffirm the current bull market that we're in. And, so we'll see what happens next week, but it's definitely going to be interesting. It's very much feels like the calm before the storm. Despite the news, economic conditions really aren't that bad, and we're getting more and more data points that sort of point to that. Inflation's hovering around its long-term historic average of 3%, and it's trending lower. Jobs are not as plentiful as they were a couple of years ago, but they're still available. Wages are rising at a fairly good pace, and we saw a pretty good data point on that this week. The housing market is slow, but prices are not collapsing. They are drifting lower. In fact, they drifted lower in all 20 of the Case-Shiller home report over the last month. They were all lower, but it wasn't a substantial amount lower. It also appears as though lower interest rates are coming, which should help the housing market. And that's probably the biggest problem facing the economy today. The biggest drag on the economy is most likely housing, I would say. One positive sign for the market moving forward is that all three potential headwinds are working as tailwinds right now. Those three things are the price of oil, the 10-year yield, and the U.S. dollar index. When those three things are rising, it makes it really tough for the market to rise. However, when those three things are falling or at a 52-week low like they are right now, it presents a pretty favorable setup for the market to go up. There was some jobs data released this week, and it was mixed, but it wasn't terrible. First, the ADP report came out and showed that the economy actually lost 32,000 jobs in November. That's the fourth negative reading in the last 6 months, so that's not great. All of that job loss was at small companies, and large companies are actually still growing. So that's an interesting dichotomy in the jobs market right now. Then Thursday, the weekly jobless claims report showed the exact opposite, with that reading being the lowest since 2022. So we saw a major decline in weekly jobless claims. That is definitely not indicative of an economy on the brink of recession. There are also some more signs that the economy is stronger than the news would have you believe. Retail and trucking stocks have been taking off over the last few weeks. Take a look at Dollar Tree, Dollar General, and Kohl's. Trucking and retail are extremely economically sensitive and would not be breaking out if consumers were strapped for cash in any way. Additionally, semiconductors are leading the way higher in this recent rally, and they're not quite at all-time highs, but they certainly look like they're headed that way, and that is happening while NVIDIA has basically been flat. So that's pretty interesting to see the semiconductor index trading as high as it is without NVIDIA leading the way higher, because for the last 3 years, it's been all about NVIDIA.
I mean, that's pretty positive if people are concerned about a bubble or a monopoly or any of those things.
Yeah.
A bit of added breath is kind of a nice thing.
As I was looking around this morning, I was finding more positive than negative.
Yeah.
And but you watch the news and it's all doom and gloom, as usual.
Yeah, but they just don't – the nuance in the market to look at it and really make a determination of whether things make sense or they seem like they're out of whack, the news isn't built for that.
The news is designed these days to be – a justification for the opinions of the people delivering the news.
Right.
Yeah. That is wrong. That
agenda exactly first wrong. And then framing facts later.
Yeah. I bring it up, though, because we get questions from clients about clients that normally, like last week I had one just out of the blue. Hey, should we take some off the table? And I'm like, well, okay. I mean, that's a discussion worth having, but what is the context? And there wasn't any. And I think it's just from watching the news and thinking that things were in a bubble and that everything's overvalued.
Right. Just an atmospheric sense of fear.
Yes, that's been instilled exactly. By.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to look at some data, you know, current trading PEs for the S&P are probably around, what, 22, 23? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, it's right. It's 21 to 23-ish.
And so that is kind of making people feel like those – price to earnings are high. But here's where, you know, a couple of years ago, we were also at 21 to 23, had disaster happen afterwards. Why did that happen? Well, there was a ton of stimulus propping up that 21 to 23 at that
right.
time. Right now, you That's have profits gone. Totally justifying 21 to 23. So I think this is a much better environment that we've seen in the recent few years, but people are thinking this is happening again.
And I don't know the numbers, but take the Mag 7 out of that 21 to 23, and I bet you it's like 16 to 18.
Here's my favorite headline. U.S. core capital goods orders surged in September, pointing to manufacturing rebound. On that note, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And as usual, we do have a trivia question. And as usual, it's sponsored by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Paul at 904-636-7888. Yeah, it's kind of a giving time of the year. So I did a little something on giving, but it's probably not in the most traditional sense. But I found out that about half of Americans with adult children financially support those children today. Half of adults with adult children. What is the average annual amount of financial support that parents give to their adult children among those who do? So we're only talking about that half of the world. But that's a lot of people.
That is a ton of people.
That is a big chunk of people.
Can we send this segment to my dad?
But I'm going to forget it when I walk out this door. I'll tell you that. That's funny. What is the annual amount on average? And I'll give you one hint. I think you're going to be surprised and disgusted. Those two things.
Okay.
So that's just a little something to feed off of. All right. You guys want to wrap up any more on the market?
Nope, that was all I had. And in fact, Joey did a little research on a big deal that went down recently, and mm-hmm. I think we should talk about that.
Yeah, I wanted to make one comment first. I've read right before the break, the U.S. core capital goods order surged in September, pointing to manufacturing rebound. And I just cannot imagine that that's anywhere near true, because you know and I know that the tariffs are going to ruin the whole damn economy, because you hear it all the time, so it must be true, right?
Of course.
Right. Don't listen, people.
I mean, I'll be honest, the tariffs have shocked me on how little they have had of any effect on the economy. Like, you hear people talking about it, and it always feels like a reach to point to something and say this was because of the tariffs. Like, it's just not, we're not seeing
it. Well, the analysis is all wrong. People look at tariffs and they say this is about prices, and it's not. Tariffs cause unemployment, not price increases. It affects how many people can buy things, but it doesn't impact the price. That's parallel studies that were done, intensive studies over a very long period of time, and they arrived at the exact same conclusion, that being because it's the right conclusion.
So yeah, but we're not really seeing unemployment go up either. So it's really shocking to me how little effect they appear to have had, at least in the short term, on anything.
I would agree. I remember the feeling, like, you know, even if regardless of anyone's stance on tariffs or not, I just remember our feeling in the office. We're like, genuinely don't know. What is this going to look like and feel like?
For sure. Very uncertain.
Honestly, I can't remember a moment where I was like, this feels like anything.
No, it's been kind of like a non-event.
Yeah.
When Biden put a 14.7% tariff on Canadian lumber, did anybody feel it?
No, not really.
I don't think so. One more quick note before we get to Joey. I think this jobs report, the losing jobs report from ADP, I don't think people are talking enough about the impact that the government shutdown had on that sort of thing. Because a lot of these big companies, if you break down that ADP report, big companies
were up.
Gained
they hired
a lot.
Yeah. And small companies lost.
It was all the small people. So if you look at the tens of thousands of people who were on furlough for a while, they aren't going to their places where they buy lunch, and they're not going to splurge on this, that, and the other thing that maybe from Mary's coffee shop to whatever. I think a lot of those people lost a lot of business, and that will be coming back. You'll probably see a whammy effect now with the next ADP report. That's my speculation, but it seems to make sense.
I don't know if that DC metro area is enough to move the needle that much. I mean, because the reason I say that is because I think you would have seen it more during the Doge layoffs. Maybe. And we really didn't see it then either. If it was enough to move the needle, I think we would have seen it then.
Maybe. We'll see next time, I think. But
yeah.
Doge has caused 300,000 terminations from the federal government so far. And where I come from, that's called a good start.
Yeah. I mean, that's
about it.
Yeah, but that never really showed up in the jobs number. So that's,
it kind of just floated right through all that information.
Yeah, in fact, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the jobs report. I think, Adam, it was one of the weeks you were out of town. And we looked at the broad number and then adjusted for the DMV, and it was actually pretty normal. Mm-hmm. And it had been, and we did determine that it was artificially elevated by the DMV.
Okay. So it had an effect.
It had an effect.
Interesting. We're going through things that we've never gone through before, that from the pandemic on, there have been so many sort of one-offs that happened to the country that we're still not sure what regular looks like anymore.
It's very true. So tell us about Netflix, Joey. Yeah.
So this is the Netflix store. I'm sure everybody knows what Netflix is. I bet a lot of listeners probably have a subscription. If you were following the news this week, you may have seen that Netflix entered into a deal to buy Warner Brothers for $83 billion, and they were part of a streaming war competition to see who was going to buy Warner Brothers, and they ended up winning, which made me think, I just kind of wanted to revisit the Netflix story, which now they're a behemoth, and I imagine this next year they'll be getting some hate, but they were once a very small company, and I think that story is interesting. So here's the Netflix story. It started with a mistake. The year is 1997. Reed Hastings returns a copy of Apollo 13 to his local video store and gets hit with a $40 late fee. He's annoyed. And on the drive to the gym, he asks himself something. Would the gym model work for movies? Flat fees, unlimited access. But an idea is not a business. First, they had to see if it was physically possible. Hastings and co-founder Mark Randolph bought a greeting card, stuck a Patsy Cline CD inside, and mailed it to Hastings' house. It arrived unbroken, and that was their green light. The early days were not technological or glamorous. In 1998, Netflix was just 30 people in a dusty office park in Scotts Valley. Every night at 2 a.m., these future tech disruptors were standing in an assembly line, hand-stuffing DVDs into red envelopes. They were licking stamps, sorting canvas bins, and racing to the post office before dawn. It was a logistics grind, and they were bleeding money. Desperate, they flew to Dallas to meet with Blockbuster. They offered to sell Netflix for just $50 million. The Blockbuster executives allegedly laughed them out of the room. That laughter was the beginning of the end for the old guard. As broadband exploded in the early 2000s, Netflix went digital. By 2010, Blockbuster filed for bankruptcy, buried under debt, and unable to pivot to changing tides. By 2013, Netflix stopped just licensing movies and started making their own. House of Cards proved that a tech company could win Emmys. They built a subscriber base of hundreds of millions, driving their market value to nearly half a trillion dollars. And there came the streaming wars, where every legacy studio, Disney, Paramount, Warner Bros., built their own digital platform. The market fragmented. Customers were suddenly paying for six different apps, and the studios were burning billions trying to catch up to the leader, Netflix. Netflix, on the other hand, stayed patient. They built a war chest while their competitors struggled with debt. And that brings us to this week's Blockbuster announcement. The disruptor has officially eaten the legacy. Netflix has announced the acquisition of Warner Brothers Discovery, the parent company of HBO Max, in a deal valued at approximately $83 billion. For reference, Netflix is worth $426 billion as of yesterday's market close. Randolph and Hastings didn't just build a competitor. They bought a slice of Hollywood history. Harry Potter, Batman, Game of Thrones, they all belong to the red envelope guys now. On the journey, the video store didn't just die. It was conquered by a frustrated customer tired of paying late fees.
Yeah, that's a good story. I mean, that's kind of like the classic American success story.
I was thinking of your American success stories as I read this.
Definitely. That's really cool.
That's not a millionaire series, though. That's a gigabillionaire series. And speaking of which,
big billionaire.
We're going to get on a little later in the show. We're going to talk about what Michael Dell has done with his wife and how he got where he is. And it, too, is an absolutely incredible story.
It is. And I also brought that article. But I was listening to a podcast this week, and they were using the Dells as sort of an example of how, and but it actually fits the Blockbuster story exactly about how these things happen. And it usually involves the legacy person laughing at the startup and ignoring them because they don't think it's a threat. And then eventually it becomes bigger.
And another one?
Amazon is another great example.
It's a good one. I agree with that too. But Bill Gates is my favorite story. Way back when, Bill Gates had been dabbling around in computers and software and such. And he took his idea and nascent software, I guess, down to Fort Lauderdale to meet with the IBM people. And he told them that he didn't need money up front or anything, but he would license his operating system to them for every computer that they sold. And they agreed readily, and they sent him home, and he could probably hear them laughing as he was leaving the building because, quote, everybody knows the money's in hardware. Kind of like me in the year 2000 driving off the Lexus parking lot in a hybrid and listening to all the salesmen laugh about this idiot who just bought a hybrid when gas was $1.60. 15 years later, I'd say it paid for itself pretty well.
Yep.
And I loved it.
What's the saying? I'd rather get a dollar from a million people than $1 million from one person. Something like that.
That's keeping your eggs in different baskets, isn't it? I don't have time to get into this right at the moment, but I want to talk about Kyle Busch, which is someone you all know. I think NASCAR is about as popular here as any place in the world. I want to tell you what happened to him and why it's relevant to you and how to avoid it. So we'll do that right after the break. which will be very shortly, about 30 seconds left. Other than that, if you got any stories about Thanksgiving or anything like that, give us a call. We can chit-chat about them. But we've managed to make this holiday season quite a bit of fun so far, and it looks like it's just beginning. Hope everybody's happy and safe out there. And I wouldn't want to be traveling either. Man, what a mess. So there's a lot to be thankful for these days. All right, we're going to take a short break, pay some bills. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we do have a caller on. We'll get right to it, but I wanted to remind everyone what the trivia question is first. Half of Americans with adult children financially support. We're getting a buzz in our headphones. Thank you.
Yeah.
Financially support those adult children. What's the average amount that those people pay annually to support their adult kids? With that said, let's. Good morning, Lane.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Happy post Thanksgiving and soon to be Christmas.
Thank you. We're trying to cure a little buzzing problem. I don't know if you can hear it, but we're getting buzzing.
I think it's just
in our headphones.
So let's just.
It was brief, but now gone.
Okay,
good. That's fine. All right. Well, let's start again. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I'm thinking a popular topic about Florida is, quote, affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody listening is connected with local or state government, I wish they would get real and look at the poor teacher, deputy, first responder that probably makes around 50 grand. And you guys are the math experts, so, you know, what, $1,300 either in rent or a mortgage per month? And these guys go around and say, well, we're going to help affordable housing, so we'll put in we're going to give a green light to the developers. We're erasing all the regulations, and developers can develop anywhere. And the next thing you know, you got $340,000, $450,000 houses popping up as a result of that. And it's like, what's affordable about that? You know, where's my $200,000 house that the deputy can afford? So they're lying to us, which brings me to the answer to your trivia. I'm going to guess 50 grand a year.
That's too
high. Some of those, where do these people, can they live?
You know, you're high, but you're on the right track, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
It is expensive to live out there, and you're absolutely right. Affordable housing is a problem, and everybody who talks about it seems to come up with an idea that won't work.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the problem is, one, government can't create affordable housing. It's not possible. And two, you can't build a single family home for $200,000 in most of the country anymore. Labor and the cost of materials is just going to drive the price point higher.
Well, in New York, they're solving it. They're just going to take those places from people and let poor people live in them.
That seems like a great solution.
And the third reason that's such a challenge is, you know, most of these policies that we see come out with affordable health care, affordable housing, anything like it, the metrics on which they base how people get benefits are so simple that they just don't capture people who have real need. And the irony is they create opportunities for people that have millions in assets but have low taxable income to benefit from things like this. We just have to get more thoughtful about how we structure any of these affordable programs.
Yes, sir. Responsible politicians. Find one of those.
Good luck.
Oxymorons abound, don't they?
Yeah. So Steve gave me the opening, so I'll have to brag about Thanksgiving. So off we go to Dean Hatchie, by the way. Look that one up in Gainesville.
I've been there.
For a week. No jogging. Bread, banana pudding, and you know, pecan pie. I lost 3 pounds.
Wow! Nice. Good work.
I'm sure someone found them.
Should I go back to jogging? But okay, so I'm a Lanzalotti MBA. You can believe that, and so that sets the stage for you to pay attention to management decisions. And over the years, I cannot imagine what goes on in boardrooms. One case, I'll give you two quick examples. One, I was involved in personally. In my sordid past, I was with a woke entertainment company, and they would take a sheet of plastic and pay somebody to draw and ink in colors and make cartoons. And they made money doing that. That's fine. And one day, some a couple of young men from General Electric in Daytona, I think it was, showed up, and they said, look what you can do with computers. You can put that stuff together. You can control every aspect. And you're not kidding. They laughed at them. Well, they were highly insulted. They are actually enraged, and they kicked them out. And, of course, years later, you know, it's all computer graphics. These guys could have let him in to the ground floor, but, you know, what can I say? Same outfit, by the way, that told George Lucas to get lost.
And, that's a bright move.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then the next one is to follow your lead on the tech companies. The there's a documentary out. It's old. I don't know how to find it. I have to look for it. But I believe, focused on Xerox. And in the olden days, Xerox was playing around. Now, there is nobody listening to the show this morning that has not had their hand on a computer mouse sometime within the last 24 hours. I'll guarantee that.
Yep.
And so Xerox was messing around with this little computer mouse, and they were playing with the graphics interface on computers, and they said, this ain't going nowhere. And I believe they invited both Gates and Steve Jobs in. Or one of them they invited in and said, here's a bunch of junk we're getting rid of. You know, we'll sell this patent to you, you know, you want it? And I think maybe it was just one of the guys was there, and then he called the other one and said, you will not believe what I just saw. And, of course, they jumped on it, and the rest is history.
Yep.
So, you know, and how can a board member of Sears Roebuck, watching the growth of Amazon and how they did it and everything out in the open, I mean, what does Amazon do that's patented and unavailable to the competitor? And they sat there and watched it happen.
Mm-hmm.
They should all be fired. Anyway,
yep.
That's me. That's my thing for this morning.
Well, that's why Walmart is still such an enduring company, is because they're one of the few that was humble enough to notice, oh boy, we got to buy Jet.com or we're going to be out of this game for good.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that fun to watch? That you could see him wake up.
Yeah.
They said, we're not going to let this happen.
Definitely.
I'm sure there was a moment of laughter a couple of years before, but then they were.
Yeah, the guy who did all that was happening. Retiring. You suppose he can afford to retire?
Yeah. Sure.
In this economy?
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, gentlemen, for great, great information, but I just had to throw that out. Well,
thank you. I appreciate the colorization of my comment. take care of yourself.
So, I'll let you all brag about your weight after Thanksgiving. So, anyway, thanks, gentlemen.
I did hit an all-time low yesterday.
So. I actually maintained my weight during Thanksgiving.
I was going to say, between me and Lane, we only gained 7 pounds.
Well, aren't you glad he took his share of it, or almost, or whatever. No, that didn't work, did it? All right. Everybody knows Kyle Busch around here, right? Kyle and Samantha Busch say that a Pacific Life insurance agent led them into a misleading insurance scheme. And that scheme has cost them $8.5 million.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it was all about purchasing complex life insurance policies marked as safe retirement plans. Mm. And I think that they invested about $10.4 million in premiums, and they lost about $8.58 million of it.
Whoa.
Now,
How is that possible?
Things just didn't seem to work out like they had in their illustrations. They illustrate all these wonderful returns on their investment, except they never pan out.
But okay, I get that. But at the same time, usually those things don't return as much as promised, but right. They don't lose 8 million, like 80% of your principal either.
Right.
That's not the norm.
Undisclosed costs, false promises of guaranteed returns, the net out-of-pocket loss exceeds 8.58 after accounting for the policy's remaining cash.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Isn't it? It's nuts.
Well, the problem is those create a liquidity issue for families. There's nothing wrong with life insurance when it's used the right way.
Right.
The problem is people use it as a cure-all. It's Swiss Army knife, but it's really just precisely excellent at one thing. And very bad at a lot of other things, just like a portfolio is. A portfolio is really good at a couple specific things.
Yeah, there's some good products out there for people who can't afford traditional long-term care that are based on life insurance. So having a good life insurance agent can be very helpful to people with money. But don't listen to them if they start talking about retirement products. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and if you hear like tax-free
it's Cyber Week.
Income.
Hello.
whoops, that was weird. If your insurance salesman starts talking about tax-free retirement income, run away.
Or if you hear the words infinite banking, it's time to step out of the
just
meeting.
Just move.
The notion of, there's one website, they email me all the time, so I'm just going to tell you, it's called Bank on Yourself.
Yeah.
And it's a crock.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. They're from that area of Florida where all this stuff emanates from down in the Fort Lauderdale area. I don't know if that's coincidence or not.
There's so many little reels on TikTok and all over the Instagram that say like, well, really wealthy people do this, and then they describe some elaborate life insurance scheme. And
fully
funded
life insurance. You can just borrow your own money back tax-free for the rest of your life until it runs out.
Total garbage.
Oh, I forgot. They didn't say that part about until it runs out. They don't have to, apparently. All right, that's enough of that. More fun stuff as soon as we get back from a short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we will go to the phones, but I wanted to make one quick comment. We might get to Michael Dell today. It might be next week. But I just wanted to talk about success again. Michael Dell started constructing computers in his dorm room in 1984 from standard components. He put that to work and in forming his company, which was not called Dell at that time, but that doesn't matter. In his first full year of business in 1985, his company grossed $73 million.
That's crazy.
And I'm here to tell you, that's not easy. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, guys.
What's happening?
Well, somebody else was talking. I'm sorry.
Okay. Do you still hear it?
No, we're good.
Okay.
So let me try to get through a few things quickly.
Okay.
Here's an amusing one. I went for a PET scan in a trailer yesterday next to Beaches Hospital. Mm-hmm. And as we know, when you do a PET scan, it involves radiation. So after it was over, I go back to the car, and I'm hitting the remote. Nothing's happening.
Oh, no.
Nothing at all. Now, of course, someone would say, like my friend said, Mike, your battery's going bad. And I go, I've had no trouble with this battery at all. As a matter of fact, when I got home, I pulled the car in the garage. It's 45 feet to the mailbox, and it's clicking back and forth with no problem at all. So my theory is, and I'm sticking with it, that the radiation, because you still have it for a while, affected the wireless signal in the remote. So
that's fascinating.
That's what I thought. I thought that was amazing. So I just sat on the curb there and hoped that enough would dissipate so I could get in the darn car and eventually
detox a little.
Yeah. What's funny. That?
You detoxed a little?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Now, very quickly,
yeah,
if you care to opine. I know you're going to touch on Michael Dell, and there's some criticism out there about what he's doing. I know that sounds a little harsh, but personally, I don't know. This idea of giving kids money teaches them right away that, hey, the government will give you things. That's just a personal opinion. What I did want to ask, though, is I've always been a little uneasy and not happy about the president or any president taking 15% of Intel or AMD, but not Micron. I'm just wondering how you feel about the government investing in public companies like we do.
It's a complicated subject, and I've got opinions all over the place on it. In general, you're right. Specifically, if it's a short-term thing to recoup some money for the government because what we're doing might involve some risk, I can live with it. But it's got to be controlled very carefully.
Yeah, I don't love it either. If there's like a sovereign wealth fund or something that owns ETFs that hold every company, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I don't like them picking winners and losers, or even the appearance of them picking winners and losers.
Yeah, I think it muddies the water. But like, when it comes to regulation, I think it makes it a little bit confusing if they have a vested interest and also they're regulating trade on these companies or who can be so powerful and whatnot.
Keep the private sector private for the most part. That's pretty hard and fast.
Even if nothing shady happens, the appearance of that potential makes it bad.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, gentlemen. Now to the trivia.
Yep.
First of all, I'm just amazed. 50% of parents or adults give to their adult. I don't know. I'm from a different generation. I grew up playing softball and football in the 50s and 60s in Brooklyn. I don't remember any adults taking care of or parents taking care of their adult children. Yep. I'm sure there were circumstances where the parents were sick and they came home to help, but I'm just amazed at what goes on
in
this country.
Yep. I didn't want help. There, and I didn't get it. Anyway, what you want to take a shot at the trivia?
I do. And in full disclosure, I saw this in an article that said that on average it's $1,474. But you asked for an annual figure, so if I multiply, my answer is going to be $17,688.
And that is actually the right number.
And also insane.
Also insane.
I agree.
Beyond comprehension.
Could I very quickly, Adam, are you the one that when it goes to charity, you pick the charities?
Yeah, that is correct.
How do you go about that, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, I usually just give to the charity that we always give to, which supports St. Jude's, because it's very meaningful to me. So hopefully that's one that doesn't offend anyone. Usually people are okay with that.
Okay. Well, let's give this one to them also.
Okay, great. Will do. Thank you.
We love that. Thank you.
You got it.
All right. Take care. Well, Adam, I suppose you feel picked on now, don't you?
Why is that?
Because I don't give you $18,000 a year.
No, I'm okay with that. I really didn't want it either. I'd rather earn my money.
Yeah, and I remind everybody that you can give cash to any one person up to $19,000 a year starting in January, and you don't have to even file any paperwork, and there's no taxes on either side. That doesn't mean you ought to do it with your kids.
Yeah.
How's that?
That's not a good idea.
I've got another one, too. Let's get to you. I want to say one thing, and then I'll ask you if you get time otherwise next week. They're about to allow a QCD, a qualified charitable distribution, to go to a donor-advised fund, which I think could be an incredibly wonderful.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, let's look into that a little bit this week, and then you guys both know a lot about donor-advised funds that I don't know, and we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, we're opening one next week for our clients, so yeah.
Good.
But I did want to talk about something else. Let's This is I just thought this was interesting. There are now 24 million millionaires in the United States, and that number grew by 1,000 a day in 2024. 1,000 new millionaires a day. That's crazy.
That is unbelievable.
Is this net worth a million?
Net worth a million.
Okay.
Yep. A recent poll found that 74% of millionaires in America work with a financial advisor, compared to just 34% of non-millionaires who work with a financial advisor. So I'm guessing that there's a little bit of self-selection there, in that people who are highly motivated tend to make decisions like that they know will help them financially. Mm-hmm. But also, I think there's a little bit of cause and effect, that if you work with an advisor, you're more likely to hit that $1 million target. And maybe I'm being a little bit self-serving when I say that, but I really believe that.
Yeah,
to
but
be
you've
true.
Got two guys right in the same room with you who agree with you completely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And no bias at all.
Well,
no, so, yeah.
What are the odds?
Yeah.
100% of the people in this room agree
Weird.
With you.
What I thought was really interesting in the study was the percent of those millionaires that consider themselves wealthy. And that is just 36% of those 24 million people who consider themselves to be wealthy.
Well, as we commented during one of the breaks, a million just doesn't buy what it used to.
It really doesn't.
Yeah, when you think about it, and this has been a topic of much discussion lately, every million gives you an income of $40,000 a year.
Yeah, that's not a lot of money.
You can live on $40,000 a year.
Well, and the other thing in here is you might have bought a $200,000 house that appreciated to $1 million, giving you like $800,000 of equity. Right. And then you might have $100,000 in assets and $100,000 in your retirement account. And you're not wealthy, but you're technically a millionaire.
Yeah.
So there are many ways to become a millionaire that would not involve being very wealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am constantly amazed by how many people that we work with, our client base, have gone over that mark. And we mint millionaires in our practice. It's just
lately
amazing.
It's been quite a few.
Yeah, yeah. And it's happening, of course, with the tailwind from the market, but of also course. Savings vehicles and that sort of thing. But we're talking about a million in managed funds. That has nothing to do with home equity or anything
right.
like that. And they're the exact same people that, I can't remember his name, wrote about when he said the millionaire next door.
In fact, we had a meeting this week with a multimillionaire. And the topic of the discussion was, would you please spend some more money? Because the same attitude that gets you
yep.
to become a millionaire also makes it hard to go and live off that money that you have then saved. And for many people, not everyone is like that, but more often than not, the millionaire next door doesn't want to spend that money. And it's, you work your whole life, let's enjoy it. You
yeah.
know, it's, people always think your financial advisor is going to tell you no, but that's not always the case.
Well, how many times in all the years that we've been doing this have people heard me say, live well along the way?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I absolutely believe that, because one of these days you're going to wind up 75 years old and you won't know how you got there.
And you can't take it with you.
No. And I look back over the 75 years of my life, and sure, there's some regrets in there, but not that many, as if I had never done anything. So still having a really good time, 53 years married and all that. So, if you want to call that a good example, do it. I certainly like to think so. And I love all of you who are listening. We'll see you next week at the same time. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Until next week.
AM 600 WB.